I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up in our international briefing, we go to South Africa to ask how South Africans are taking to the idea of having a president who practices polygamy. New President Jacob Zuma has three wives. We'll hear from two South African journalists with different perspectives about that. That's in just a few minutes. But first, journalists under attack. Journalist Roxana Saberi was freed from the notorious Evin prison in Iran this week after spending more than 3 months behind bars on charges of spying for the United States.
I'm of course very happy to be free and to be with my parents again, and I want to thank all the people all over the world, which I'm just finding out about really, who, whether they knew me or not, helped me and my family during this period. I don't have any specific plans for the moment. I just want to be with my parents and my friends and to relax.
Saberi's case drew worldwide attention, prompting media organizations, including NPR, for whom she had freelanced, and world leaders, including President Obama, to call for her release. Now, it isn't clear whether international pressure or Iran's internal political divisions led to Saberi's freedom. But while Saberi's supporters around the world are cheering her release, we thought it was important to remember the journalists who remain behind bars or at grave risk for doing their jobs around the world. We're going to talk more about that with Joel Simon. He's the executive director of the Committee to Protect Journalists. It's an organization that promotes press freedom around the world, and he's joining us from our bureau in New York. We're also joined by NPR's Dwali Saikautau, who's been covering the case of two American journalists, Laura Ling and Yuna Lee, who were recently imprisoned in North Korea. She joined us from Seoul, South Korea. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Great to be here.
Dwali, can we start with you? First, we want to hear the facts of these cases. Who are these two journalists? Why were they arrested? What has been said about why they were arrested? And where are they being held?
Well, there's a lot of things we don't know, but here's what we do know. The journalists Laura Ling and Yuna Lee worked for Current TV. That's the global online media network in San Francisco. While on assignment, the two were arrested March 17th, reportedly around 3 in the morning along the Tumen River. Now, this is a border area between China and North Korea in the northeast of the Korean Peninsula, known to be populated with refugees or defectors from the north. From Reporters Without Borders, we understand that the female journalists were investigating the smuggling of women out of North Korea and their sale in China. Two others, a cameraman and a guide, escaped capture. And since then, of course, people have been wanting those two to reveal more about what happened since they got away. It's actually impossible to know if the North Korean forces walked over the frozen river to the Chinese side and arrested them, or if the group crossed into North Korea trying to possibly obtain footage of the reclusive nation.
Do we know whether there are any formal charges against them? And if so, what are they? And how do you go about determining what's going on with them? Have they been visited by the Red Cross or any international organizations?
No. I mean, it's still unclear at this time what they're charged with. Initial reports from North Korea suggested they would be charged with illegally crossing into North Korea, but then there were reports accusing the journalists of spying for the U.S., similar to what Roxana Saberi's situation was. Now, for weeks, we've been seeing reports where North Korea would say, some North Korean official would say, the illegal entry of U.S. reporters into the DPRK, that's North Korea's official name, and their suspected hostile acts have been confirmed by evidence and their statements. And that's according to some investigation that the North Korea apparently did. But, you know, the bottom line is that North Korea's criminal code says a conviction for illegal entry could mean several years in a labor camp. Now, if it's a harsher crime, say espionage, the sentence could be 5 to 10 years in prison. But, analysts here in Seoul are saying that's unlikely because some see that North Korea, is going to use this as a concession to get more concessions from the U.S. And since Washington's envoy to the North, Stephen Bosworth, said the U.S. is considering talking bilaterally with North Korea, there's hope that they will ultimately be released.
We should mention that we reached out to broadcast journalist Lisa Ling, who is the sister of Laura Ling, and she declined to comment, along with Current TV, where both women are, for whom both women were reporting, and they also declined to comment. Joel, I think it is fair to say that the case of these two journalists in North Korea has received a great deal of less attention than that of Roxana Saberi. And I wonder, first of all, why you think that is, and is there generally some protocol that is helpful in cases like this? Do you find, is the media attention generally helpful or not?
Well, it depends, and I think that gets to precisely why the Roxana Saberi case got so much attention and this case has gotten so much less. You, in fact, mentioned that you reached out to the families, and you reached out to Current TV. They declined to comment. They're not talking to us. In the Roxana Saberi case, everybody agreed that publicity would be helpful. The family, the employers, the lawyers. And so we participated in that effort, and we're strategic about it. We tried to generate international publicity, not just in the United States. When you have a case like these detentions in North Korea, if there's something going on behind the scenes, and I don't know that there is, you don't want to work at cross purposes. So coordination is very important, and there isn't coordination in terms of a public media campaign here. So we're talking about this situation, but we're not generating the kind of publicity we did with Roxana Saberi.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin, and I'm speaking with NPR's Tuahle Sikautau and Joel Simon of the Committee to Protect Journalists about the plight of journalists at risk and in prison around the world. We're talking about this in the wake of the release of Roxana Saberi from the Evin prison in Iran. Joel, it's my understanding that the number of journalists imprisoned and threats against journalists have actually increased over the past decade. Do I have that right? And why is that, in your
absolutely.
Opinion?
There are a couple of factors that contributed to that. I mean, one thing to keep in mind was in the year 2000, we do an annual census of journalists in prison around the world. There were 81 journalists around in jail around the world. At the end of 2001, in the aftermath of the attacks, the September 11th attacks, there were about 137. Today, there are 125. So you see a sharp increase in the number of journalists in prison. And to a certain extent, it was justified in the name of the war on terror. You saw countries appropriating this kind of rhetoric to justify their own repressive policies. And you also saw a sharp increase in the number of journalists killed around the world. Now, Iraq is the primary reason for that. That was the most deadly conflict that we've ever recorded, and perhaps in history, for the press. 135 journalists dead, 51 media workers. So if you look at those, the Iraq war and the increase in imprisonment around the world, these are very challenging times for journalists.
Tuahle, how much attention is the case of these two journalists receiving in South Korea, where you are?
Well, South Korea is watching this story curiously because they want to see how North Korea is going to play this card with the U.S. At the same time, North Korea has one of their own in detention, a South Korean man identified only as Yu, who worked for South Korea's Hyundai Osan company in a North Korean border town called Kaesong. That man was detained on March 30th because he allegedly made disparaging remarks about North Korea's regime and reportedly tried to convince a North Korean female worker to defend to the south. South Korean officials haven't been able to get access to him for more than a month. Like the two journalists, officials are trying to secure his freedom behind closed doors. U.S. officials are working with Swedish diplomats and the Chinese government to free the two journalists.
Now, Joel, you mentioned that in the Roxana Saberi case, media organizations, family, the government sometimes work in concert. But as the a member of a press organization, the press often feels a need to make its own statement about journalists being threatened, whether the government chooses to do so or not. What is the posture of the Committee to Protect Journalists at this point? North Korea is such a difficult place to gain access to. The U.S. does not have direct diplomatic relations with North Korea. As Tuahle pointed out, we work through third-party nations. So what is to be done now?
Well, first, I didn't want to suggest that we would in any way take our cues from the government on how to respond. We would be more likely to work more closely with the family and the employers and colleagues in terms of determining our strategy.
Well, that's true, but it is true that government officials would offer advice if they
absolutely
felt it would be helpful. In
absolutely
fact, we see this in other countries, for example, in Israel, in the case of the military figures who were captured in a cross-border raid by Hamas. The government had one perspective about the best way to proceed. Mm-hmm. The family had a very different perspective, and they acted accordingly. So, but anyway.
Absolutely. But I think that, you know, when we're thinking about strategically about Iran and what publicity could achieve, there was, you know, Iran is a very different place from North Korea. I mean, you have some sort of judicial process. You have a political process which is underway, and it's a competitive political process. You have different political factions within Iran, and Iran cares to a certain extent about what the world thinks about it. It might not care, it might not perceive these issues the same way we do here, but it does care. So we saw that we had some leverage, and we tried to apply it. It's very different in North Korea. It's very difficult to know what's going on internally. There's even less information. There's no internal politics that are visible to outsiders. North Korea is much more isolated than Iran. So the pressure points are more limited. We're certainly open to ramping up the international attention, and we would welcome the opportunity to do so. But it's important for us that it be part of a systematic approach and part of an overall strategy.
And finally, Joel, if I could get another sort of global perspective from you, you mentioned Iraq and Afghanistan, a very dangerous place, very dangerous places for journalists to work. Are there other parts of the world where journalists are particularly at risk for doing their jobs?
There are so many places around the world. And, you know, when we talk about imprisonment and violence against journalists, you usually can divide them up into two camps. You know, in countries that are repressive, imprison journalists, and the worst countries, the worst records you'll find in China, which is the world's leading jailer of journalists, followed by Cuba, Burma, Iran has at least 5-6 journalists in jail in Iran. And in terms of violence, other than Iraq and Afghanistan, which we've highlighted, Somalia, that's a really horrific place for journalists and a story that's undercover. But even places like Mexico, Russia, the Philippines. These are all countries where there's systematic violence against the press, and the government response is inadequate. There's almost universal impunity for these killings.
All right, we have to leave it there, Joel. Thank you so much. Joel Simon is the executive director of the Committee to Protect Journalists. He joined us from our bureau in New York. And NPR journalist Twali Saikautau joined us from Seoul, South Korea. I thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you.